Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Everything Iconic Pop Dive with me, Danny Pellegrino, where my guests and I dive into iconic pop culture touchstones. Today, we are diving into 1997's Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, starring the late Whitney Houston and Brandy Norwood. This made-for-TV remake of the classic fairy tale was one of the very first entries into ABC's weekly Wonderful World of Disney. Cinderella first aired on Sunday, November 2nd, 1997 at 7 p.m., months after Brandy premiered her hit TV sitcom Moesha, and 3 years after her self-titled debut album. It was one of the highest-rated programs of the year, seen by over 60 million people in its first showing. The film went on to become a home video sensation on VHS and continued to have robust ratings and encore airings for the ABC network and the Disney Channel. The film was revolutionary for its colorblind casting, paving the way for Broadway's Hamilton and showing us the very first African-American Disney princess. Children of all colors could see themselves portrayed on screen, and the incredible ratings for the TV film proved that audiences were hungry for multi-ethnic stories. Filmed for $12 million, the film had A-list talent, robust and colorful sets, beautiful music, and was produced by Queen Whitney herself. We watched in awe as Whitney whisked Brandy off to the ball of her dreams and told her, "It's possible," through a song. Whitney wasn't just singing to Brandy, she was singing to a generation of children watching, telling them that their dreams are possible. Last year, on the 20th anniversary of the film, R. Eric Thomas wrote this about the movie for Elle.com. He said, "Cinderella taught me something revolutionary about the limitless nature of storytelling. That in stories, there are no constraints. The only limit is your imagination. And once you learn that, you don't unlearn it. If audiences can make sense of a fairy godmother turning mice into coachmen, they can figure out a multiracial family tree or really anything else. If you're lucky, in the 20 years since Cinderella premiered, you've had one of those Brandy in the carriage moments where you're speeding off to something you thought was impossible. In those moments, I imagine Whitney flying alongside me, accompanying me to a bigger, bolder, better world. As she taught us all those years ago, it's possible." I invited my friend Nathan Ramos to discuss the cultural impact of the movie and so much more. This is an Everything Iconic Pop Dive into the Wonderful World of Disney presents Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Okay, guys, I'm here with Nathan Ramos, a dear old friend. We went to college together, and I'm so excited that you're here to talk about 1997 Cinderella. First, I want you to tell me a little bit about your background with Disney.
I guess to rewind, I was an actor in New York for a while, and I was actually in the first professional cast of Disney's Mulan, kind of before it was supposed to go to Broadway. And so I was kind of in that show. It was kind of actually the last theater show I did. But right now I actually happen to write the songs and the script for the reboot of the Mickey Mouse Club, which is Club Mickey Mouse. And it's this kind of digital forward show, like the new generation of Britney, Christina, and Justin's like singing, dancing, just like killing it. And so we actually just wrapped the back to school special. And so,
by the way, what a time that original, not, it wasn't the original Mickey Mouse Club, but that one that we grew up with.
Yeah.
I mean, that cast is incredible. And you think Carrie Russell, Ryan Gosling, JC Chazé, Justin Timberlake, who else am I missing? Brittany, Christina,
Tony Luca from The Voice.
Oh my God, was he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Mouseketeer. Yeah.
I feel bad for those, the ones that aren't those people. Like, it was just such a stacked cast. Mm-hmm.
There's even people that, like, Dee Dee Magno Hall, she was the first Filipino, first Asian Mouseketeer, and she was with that crew, and she's now the voice of Pearl on Steven Universe, and she's, she transitioned to Broadway, was, like, the first Asian person in Wicked. So, I mean, like, that whole crew of people killed it. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so when you're working with these young kids now, do you notice that kind of talent? Do you see it?
Yeah, the talent was, what's really interesting about the cast now is they've, a lot of them have already kind of like quote unquote made it, like, oh, sorry, like we're all on World of Dance right now. So like we can't make rehearsal.
Yeah,
we have to go like next week. They're like, oh, like we just danced in the Super Bowl. Like, cause we were, it's such a funny, like, this is the surprise guest. And they're like, oh yeah, we've already like worked with them.
Oh my
like,
God.
You all are stars. You all are, we're on Ellen last week. It's such a funny thing, how, you know, these kind of self-made stars who are, they already have 300,000 followers. And so we just kind of work with these people who've already kind of made themselves. And it's really, I think that's the really kind of cool thing about like today's youth.
Yeah. I was working with a social media influencer recently. I thought they were like a 12-year-old kid. And then to come to find out, it was like, they have this huge, crazy following.
Yeah.
And then of course I got jealous. It can move to jealousy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But so you, aside from working so much with Disney, are you, you're a Disney fan too, right?
A huge Disney fan.
Yeah.
Because my parents were very religious growing up, you know, growing up in Ohio.
And we're both Ohio boys.
Yes. Wait, where did you go?
I'm outside of Cleveland. I'm like Solon, Ohio, outside of Cleveland.
So
we're right there.
Yeah. Really, the only thing that we were allowed to watch growing up were Disney movies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just that whole golden age, like Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast.
What's your favorite?
Mulan was my favorite.
Right.
The one of my favorite moments ever was when we got into the room for the cast of it, and then we all started singing "Make a Man Out of You," and none of us could get through the song because we were all just sobbing because it was like dream come true moment.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say.
Can I just stop you for a second? And I'm having this flashback of seventh grade choir. Mm-hmm. We did that song, "I'll Make a Man Out of You," and the choir teacher had given me like one line to do solo, and then took it away.
What?
Nathan, I'm like seriously having flashbacks. I'm gonna have a nightmare tonight because I swear I remember they gave it to me to sing. They sort of pieced out, you know, in that song how there's different lines,
catch
right?
My breath.
Say goodbye to those who knew.
Yeah,
I can't sing. You could all hear that. And I remember they gave me the line. I was like so excited. I did it like one time, and then the choir person left the room with the assistant or something, and then they came back. They're like, actually, we're gonna give that to somebody else.
Who got
and
to
I was
sing
devastated.
It?
I don't know. Fuck them, though.
Well, where are they now? Exactly.
Fuck that person.
Yeah.
I still can't. But I mean, I get it. Also, I can't sing. I was actually told once in a voice lesson that I'm tone deaf.
You know what, though? I feel like in seventh grade, the joy of an experience should outweigh someone's future prospects on, you know.
Right. On Broadway. I mean, I agree. It's like seventh grade. It's like, just let me sing the fucking line.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those lines, it was like a talky line.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even... I had to, you know, get perfect pitch.
Right.
La la la.
Sounds like that.
Did you hear me just hit that?
Yes,
note?
You nailed it.
You nailed it.
Yeah. So you showed her or him, whoever your teacher was.
It was a him. Yeah. It was a him. That fucking asshole. This is a Disney show. I should watch the language. So do you remember watching the Cinderella for the first time? Did you watch it when it aired?
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched it when it aired. The lead up to it because they were like commercials and. It was the golden age of divas, you know, like Whitney, even and Brandy.
And Brandy,
you know,
was huge in the 90s.
Yes, and Moesha was so huge. I loved Moesha. I just remember one episode of Moesha where like the mother taught her to put like toothpaste on her pimples. And I like always did that for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well, they said to do
Moesha.
This on Moesha. Exactly.
And that Moesha theme song was so good.
Yeah, Moe to the, eat to the.
Moesha. Yes. And did you watch The Parkers? I love The Parkers, too, the spinoff of Moesha.
I love
this. Yeah, so Cinderella came out, I think it was 3 months after Moesha premiered. So it was like still sort of new in Brandy's career, but she had 3 years since her debut album came out.
Yeah.
So she was like musically on the scene, but this was sort of the first big project that she did on screen.
Mm.
But I thought she did so great.
Mild and as meek as a mouse.
Yeah.
And I remember watching, and I remember sitting down with my mom, and we would watch The Wonderful World of Disney together. Mm-hmm. And Cinderella's was one of the first Wonderful World of Disney movies. Mm-hmm. Sunday nights at 7 p.m. like sitting down, mm-hmm. and it was like a great mix. That whole block was a mix of movies that we had already seen come out, like Aladdin, Lion King, those ones that we love, mm-hmm. and then original movies. I remember there was one with Kirstie Alley playing a tooth fairy.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah. Right? Toothless. Yes, Toothless. Yeah.
I hate that. I remember that. I hate myself.
No, it's amazing. Wait. Yeah, there was also like the Drew Carey, like Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one came, I think that came after Cinderella, though, but yeah.
Oh God, what a weird world that was.
Yeah. I know,
Drew Carey as the, there like a, I don't know, Rosie as the Easter Bunny or something? Yeah. I don't know. Did you watch it with family at the time, or did you watch it alone?
Yeah, I watched it with family, because my parents had this weird green wooden cabinet in their bedroom, and so we would sit in it. We'd all sit on their king size bed, and we'd pull the doors open of this cabinet, and we'd like watch, mm-hmm. you know, Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday nights. And it's kind of that kind of feeling when you are seeing something for the first time, because mm-hmm. we all knew the story of Cinderella. You know, we all mm-hmm. like all have this vision of what that was, and when Whoopi Goldberg comes on screen, and Brandy comes on screen, and Whitney and Paolo as mm-hmm. the prince.
Mother, I'll go to the ball. But if I don't find her tonight, you'll let me fall in love my own way, with no interference, no matter how long it takes.
It does have the ring of fairness to it.
It literally, there was this kind of like paradigm shift, like my whole like world changed from this movie. Like,
tell me about it. Tell me why. Tell me. I mean, I know why, but tell me why.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing where you never know that you're allowed to be something until someone gives you permission to feel that way. Right. And that's kind of how I feel about representation. And when I saw Paolo, it was almost this weird thing of, there was this distance where like I saw him, he looks exactly like my dad. Like, wow. My dad and Paolo look like twins. And so...
So your dad's really hot.
My dad's super hot.
Paolo's gorgeous, yeah.
Oh, God. Like,
send me a picture. Yeah. What's his handle on Instagram?
His handle is at... No, it was almost this like disbelief moment where I was just like, no, that can't be right. Like, he has to be something else besides me, because like I couldn't be a prince, because I'm not allowed to be a prince. So like, I don't understand like who this person is.
Cause you've never seen a prince that looked like you before. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, so after that, like we had the VHS and then I had the DVD. I've seen this movie countless times. Right. Cause it's the first prince. And I think kind of like the last Asian mm-hmm. prince that we've had. So it's this, it made such a mark on me.
Well, know? And I think the colorblind casting was just so important to this movie. I was thinking, I know there's been a couple times since, but I'm shocked that it hasn't been more of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it bugs me. It shocks me. It's like, why haven't there been more stories that have been told in this way where the casting was completely colorblind? Mm-hmm. Because in this movie, you know, you had the stepsisters. One was white, one was black, but they never explained.
Mother! Be the envy of everyone at the ball.
Do you really think so, Mother?
Stand still. Our family has always been known for its fascinating women.
They never explained it. Yeah. It was just, this is how it is. People are going to accept it. And as a kid, I remember it was 97. I was 12. I don't remember ever feeling like it needed to be explained, because I mean, we were at that young age where it's like, you just are presenting this to children. And I just wish there were more stories that were told that way.
Yeah.
And I don't ever remember thinking at that time, like, oh, Brandy's African-American. Mm-hmm. She was a princess to me, but I wish more stories were told in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish, because, you know, they rebooted, they're doing all these live action movies mm-hmm. now.
And they just did another Cinderella, a big, mm-hmm. big Cinderella.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting... The fact that in 1997, there was this... I mean, there actually was a lot of pushback, because I was looking up all the reviews from back then and everything, and there was a guy, he said it was a... He called it a garish desecration
of
the source material. And it was like, oh, like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean? Because he was saying, like, yes, Whitney's talented. Yes, Brandy's talented. Yes, this Whoopi's... Like, all these people are talented, but it's a garish desecration regardless. It's this kind of this coded language that, you know, like, what does it actually mean kind of thing?
It's so funny you say that, because I looked up some clips on YouTube and I saw an Entertainment Tonight, like one of those pre-packaged interviews. Mm-hmm. And it was the guy from Entertainment Tonight on set with Whitney Houston. So she was literally just coming off screen.
Yeah.
The movie hadn't been out.
You've kind of sexed her up here. I mean, this.
Yeah, she's pretty sassy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, she's pretty, very direct.
Sassy.
Yeah, she's got a little sass up in her.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, honey, you know, she talks like that kind of stuff.
Does the head thing?
Yeah, she does all that stuff, you know.
How do you do that? I can't.
I don't know.
I don't know, man. I can't do that.
It's a hood thing.
Is that a hood thing? It's dope. I can tell you that, boy. It is.
And it's dope. It's going to get you in trouble.
But, yeah, I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, what are you saying, dude? Stop it.
Whoa.
Like, stop talking. But, you know, that's, I don't know. It was a different time, too, but still.
Mm-hmm. But I think it still happens today, and I think it's kind of like this. That's why this Cinderella has such a legacy, because it did kind of like shift the ideas for so many young people. Paolo was talking about, he was like the last person in the last day in the last hour to come in, and he was understudying. Yeah, to audition. He was understudying this guy who was playing the young lover in King and I. And so I actually, that guy's name was Jose Lana, and I understudied him off Broadway in New York.
Oh my God.
And so then I got to meet Paolo because of that. It was honestly like, it was an out-of-body experience.
Sure.
To meet Paolo in person.
To meet the prince, this guy that you grew up seeing as the prince that you said gave you excitement.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Permission to dream of being a prince.
Yeah, it was like he was my father. And it was probably like my top three most starstruck moments in my life, where I like was so embarrassing. It was like him, someone from like season 7 of So You Think You Can Dance,
oh my God, I get in these So You Think You Can Dance wormholes where I'm just like 3 hours at night spent watching clips from 08.
Yes. Just crying.
Of just like every performance of Bleeding Love from So You Think You Can Dance.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, the casting, speaking of it, they really did have to fight for it. So I just want to explain, originally they wanted Whitney to play Cinderella. And then years and years had gone by as this had been sort of loosely in production. And then Whitney had felt she was too old, so she wanted to put Brandy as Cinderella. And
you were supposed to play Cinderella first.
Yeah.
And then you said, no, this isn't for me. This
is
for Brandy.
No,
right?
This one's for Brandy. Yeah.
And you called her up, and what was
I
she?
Did.
Was she
I
a
said,
little shocked?
Will you play Cinderella for me? And she said, yes! And she was screaming and excited. And she said, only if you play my godmother. And I said, okay, we'll do it.
She did get some pushback from some of the executives. I think one of them in the notes that I researched and some of the stuff I researched, one of the guys wanted Jewel to play Cinderella. And they tried to convince some of the other producers and Whitney, you know, we already have you as a wicked stepmom. Shouldn't we have a white girl as Cinderella? And it's like, bugs me.
Yeah, and I just love that, like, Jewel was the choice.
I know Jewel, of all people, I know.
Of all people, like, there were so many 90s pop princesses.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you're going down the line, you're just like, let me pull Jewel from this pile here. Like,
oh my God, I wonder who else was on that list. Okay, let me think. I feel like Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Love Hewitt would have probably been
she
a great
been
Cinderella.
Great. She would have been
I mean, her single Bare Naked.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. But it was so great. And all of the casting all around, you had Whoopi Goldberg and Victor Garber as husband and wife. They played Paolo's parents.
Yeah.
And again, you would see them and there was no explanation of how Paolo came from these two parents. It was like, this is just the world we live in. And then people of color populating this whole film, not just the leads, but also the extras. It was like in the scenes in the courtyards and the balls and everything. It was like everyone was different colors.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Yeah. It just felt like everyone felt included in this movie.
So why do you think more productions haven't done this? I mean, I know like Hamilton is sort of the famous example of doing this colorblind casting. But what do you think is stopping people?
A lot of it is kind of like connection to source material. If you're selling a brand on nostalgia, you're having to recycle the kind of the same thing. And so this wasn't a reproduction of the Cinderella Disney movie. This was a reproduction of the Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. So, I mean, like, I think that what would be exciting is to really kind of do that. You know, like, I think that we're starting to kind of see this reinvention of musicals, like, on TV. You know, they're doing Rent soon, and they did, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar. And so I think that with these kinds of things, I hope that we kind of get the ball rolling. Because, I mean, even with Grease, I thought Grease was beautifully shot, was beautifully done. And
the
like,
live Grease on Fox.
Yeah, live Grease on Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, I was bartending.
Yeah, I liked Grease. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of it. Yeah.
But I just remember Vanessa Hudgens was, I think, was she Rizzo? Yeah.
Right. I love the role of Rizzo.
Yeah. But I think that that's kind of the thing, because I think Disney's in kind of this strange place for me. And I guess, I'm talking to my employer, but like, but it's this kind of strange thing where, like, all their new IPs, like, you know, when you look at Club Mickey, like, it's super diverse, super fun. Everyone's represented. There's, you know, there's all different shapes and sizes and colors on it, and it's really exciting to see these new, these like reinventions of these IPs. Whereas Disney movies, it's hard because like these, you're taking these animated films and you're making them into, you know,
live action.
Yeah, live action. And so people want to see like the exact, they want to see the exact moment where Belle like runs up the hill. They want to see the exact moment where Belle comes down the stairs, you know, when it's, we lose the creativity. It's kind of like just photocopying onto a different medium. And so
that's my problem with those remakes, is that they just feel too carbon copy. And it's like, I'll just watch the animated film. If you're going to show me exactly like what the animated film was, I'll just watch that. And I'd much rather see the animated voices or hear the animated voices than Emma Watson trying to hit a note. I mean, she sings as good as I do. That choir teacher needed to go pull that girl out of that studio.
Some choir teacher needed to take away her
That whole solo. She had like four songs in there. I'm like, why is she singing in my ear? Her bleeding in my ears.
It, even like, even if we overdub, you know, like go the My Fair Lady route where, you know, you had someone overdub from like the 1950s, 1960s version. You, that even would be...
We're
like,
talking even the, in terms of these animated films. Didn't Lea Salonga dub for
Ming-Na Wen? So Ming-Na Wen was the speaking voice of Mulan, and then Lea Salonga was the singing voice. And then so Lea Salonga was the singing voice also for Jasmine. So
Lea Salonga, by the way, if you guys don't know her, please go research her. She's amazingly talented, and also isn't she the only person to ever be two Disney princesses? Right?
Yeah.
She literally did the singing voice for Jasmine and Mulan. Like that's fucking amazing. Could you imagine? Oh my God, I would die. They just did recently, there was like a Disney press event or something where it was all the women who are the voices of the Disney princesses. And it's like, I worship these women. They're just amazing.
And they all sounded exactly the same, except for Belle. She gave me that, like, she gave me a little bit of a rasp, but I was here for it.
Paige O'Hara, is that her? Okay, now I want to talk about the music in the movie. The music is so good. Do you have a favorite song?
Oh gosh, I mean...
In My Own Little Corner is a bop, I think.
In My Own Little Corner is a bop.
Yeah, it's so cute. Just as long as I stay in my own little corner, all alone, in my own
little chair. I just like love when she takes the broom and she's doing the hunter part. Like, it's so cute. And because like the choreography and the music like just synced so well in this movie. I mean, I love Impossible. Impossible is that to me is that perfect synergy of like taking something old and then taking the best of what is new, with Whitney Houston's just like undeniable talent and Brandy's like vulnerability, and mixing all three of those things together. And I feel like that's what Impossible is. For the world is full. Actually, probably one of my favorite songs was Bernadette Peters' song to the daughters. They put it in there to kind of give the wicked stepmother this arc. Don't marry for love, marry for money, so that, because safety is better than your heart. Kind of like, oh, that makes sense, because like you're a single mother now having to care for three children, and like Cinderella, the embodiment of like this man that you really did love, but now like your life is very difficult because of this. They did so much work on just like updating the script and giving everybody agency and just really letting everyone have this whole arc. And like, I really appreciate it.
And having someone like Bernadette Peters, like, you got to give her a song.
Yeah.
You got to have, they even gave Whoopi a little song. She's got like a little, and I love hearing Whoopi. But it's interesting with the leads, with Whitney and Brandy, they have such pop voices. And then they were doing these very big Broadway songs, but they did it in the most beautiful way, and meshing, like you said, meshing the quality of pop with these Broadway songs. And somehow it worked. I mean, I think Impossible is just, I mean, such a, that's what I think you think of when you think about this movie, right? Even all the commercials, I was looking on YouTube, commercials for the movie and trailers and everything. It's like, they all focus on Impossible. And that whole sequence in the movie, it's when she's being dragged off to the ball and she's in the carriage, and it's just this very inspirational song and just singing beautifully. And then their voices, Whitney's and Brandy's, are also so different.
Like, so different.
So there's a clip of a behind the scenes on YouTube, which it's sort of like this iconic clip of Brandy and Whitney singing Impossible in the recording studio. And Brandy's trying her best.
Impossible.
Why are you down there?
Impossible.
And I should mention this clip. It's like a Disney produced. So it was for like their press kit or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's just this quick little moment that snuck in the press kit, like some shady gay editor probably snuck it in. And it's this moment where Brandy is trying and Whitney's just like, why are you down there?
Because like Disney is so, they are so ironclad with image and what you let be shown, and the fact that they just like show that it was
a dream.
It is iconic. Like it is.
Why are you
iconic.
Down there?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me laugh. That's like one of those things where it's late at night, if I can't sleep, it'll randomly pop in my head and I'll rock to sleep.
Exactly.
Just like, knowing that it was produced.
Everything is right in the world. Yeah.
I know. I really wish we could get the unedited footage of that rehearsal. Time.
It's so interesting because it was such a kind of a tumultuous time in Whitney's life, you know, while she was filming the movie, because she said, I only have 4 days to film this movie.
Right.
And she also said when they were, you know, doing the original reading for her, like she was like 7 hours late, like to the reading. And
it was a rough time for Whitney's life. And I had read interviews that it was very hard to get this whole thing off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, they only had a limited time with Whitney and they had a limited budget. It was a $12 million budget. Yeah. So then even at the end they got Whitney, but then they sort of had to do some weird CGI stuff because they couldn't afford to do like the final scene. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting story actually about Whoopi Goldberg giving her money, her day rate, so that they can finish the movie. And that's just an amazing thing of Whoopi. People don't know how amazing Whoopi is in those kind of quiet moments.
Yeah, like she would stay on set all day even if they like didn't need her.
Oh yeah, Whoopi would just hang out on set, and Whoopi said that little kids would come up on set and she would be smoking or something, and she'd put the cigarette away because she said she didn't want the Disney image. She didn't want kids to see a Disney star smoking a cigarette. And it's like, that's amazing. I love Whoopi so much. She'd be one of those people that I would freak out. I would cry. I would freak out.
I was bartending in New York and I'm sitting and we're like closing, because we would close from like 3 to 5 or whatever. And Hilary Swank walks in and sits down at one booth. And I'm just like, okay, like we have to keep the bar open because Hilary Swank is here.
Sure, sure.
And then 2 minutes later, Whoopi Goldberg walks in and sits on the opposite. And I'm the only person in there. And so I had to serve both Hilary Swank and Whoopi Goldberg. I lost
it. Did you get diarrhea?
Literally. I told my manager, I was like, I can't serve Whoopi Goldberg because like I'm too shaken. She raised me. So like, I can't. Yeah. So
I had to serve Ryan Phillippe when he was wearing just a towel once. Like I bartended at this place. It was a spa, but there was a restaurant and he came in. People could come in their like spa clothes.
Right, right.
And I mean, I had trouble serving, but for different reasons. You said Whoopi was your mother. He was my daddy. So we talk about the music, and Impossible leads into that scene where she gets to go to the ball and she's in that beautiful blue dress. And one of the things I found interesting about the Cinderella story in this version in particular, she was only there for 45 minutes to fall in love. Like she fell in love in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
Oh man, I used to teach Romeo and Juliet to 14-year-olds, and I would ask them this question.
Do they get it?
You know what? They were very smart. Like, they're very kind of cognizant, and some of them are romantic and like, yes, I believe in love at first sight. But then like you have those cynic kids who are just like, no, like it's just lust. If lust can turn into love. Right. And I think that, you know, like Brandy and Paolo are two beautiful people. They saw each other and like
their first moment, they have so much chemistry on like the way that they're looking at each other. Mm-hmm. There's a gif of it online. You could just see that first look, and it really is the most romantic first look. They have chemistry.
Yeah. And I think even if it was love at first sight, like they did, you know, meet as other people. And so it's this interesting thing that like Prince meets Cinderella when he's pretending to be someone else, and then they meet again and he's really who he is, and then Cinderella is pretending to be someone else.
Do you think Cinderella as a story is outdated?
I think that they, that's a good question. I think
I know.
Duh. I'm just kidding. well
you're right.
I think that they did a really good job updating the story.
This one, this version.
Because I think, like, you know, in the original version, she is a pretty passive hero. Like, she's the most passive hero. Like, the prince is doing all the work. Mm-hmm. But how do we activate passivity, I think, is the question that, like, the writer had to ask themselves for this script. Because it's like, okay, she's still, you know, she's still going to be, like, locked in the room and everything. But, like, how do we activate her? And I think that they really did a really great job of
in the beginning when he's just like, you're not like the other girls. And she's like, well, what is a girl supposed to be like? Even though she's in a place where she doesn't have any power, like she's still able to assert herself.
Voice that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think the Cinderella in this story was a strong person, even though the circumstances don't necessarily give her the most agency. She goes to the ball and she dances and she lives her life. And like she kind of fulfills everything that she wanted to fulfill in that way that she was active.
I totally agree. You know, one of the other things I love about this movie is the sets are beautiful. It looks sort of rich. I know it was a TV movie, but we said it was $12 million. Mm-hmm. But everything looks really good.
Yeah.
And even though there's cheesy special effects and cheesy CGI, for some reason, it's charming, right?
It is.
The weird little twirly things they do with the CGI. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's charming. And seeing Whitney and flying alongside Brandy in the carriage. It's just so cute.
Yeah. And 20 years later, like the costumes look timeless.
Costumes, right.
The Wicked Stepsisters costumes, those kind of like the hoop skirts that they wear and just the colors. What I really loved was because they had this kind of whole colorblind casting moment, they really got to lean into that in a really respectful way, I felt, like with the costumes, because there was pulls from all different cultures make these costumes that if it was just an all white cast or all certain ethnicity cast, then you wouldn't necessarily be able to cross all those lines. But because it was this like, yes, we're going to try it. We're just going to throw everything into this beautiful pot and boil it together and make a wonderful stew. It really worked for me.
And thank God for Whitney for getting this project together, because I don't know, really at that time, I mean, you think about A-list women of color and you have the two of them in this film with Whoopi and Whitney, because there's very few. And even now, I mean, I'm trying to think of who would be that female person of color that could get something like this off the ground. But Whitney was just such a cross-generational, cross-ethnicity, huge superstar. It's just amazing that she really fought to get this to happen and fought to get Brandy in the film. And
why shouldn't every child see their own kind? It's cool. It's all right. Hey.
Who do you think would be, if they did this now, a version similar to this? Do you think they could do it with?
I mean, like, I feel like the only person right now that comes close to, like, Whitney's utter dominance as like a cultural marker, I feel like, is Beyonce.
Right. Beyonce could do it.
Yeah. I feel like if Beyonce, but I can't think of that like young up and comer who would be Cinderella.
The Cinderella,
I mean, like maybe like Normani from Fifth Harmony or like a Kiki Palmer.
Or Zendaya or
Zendaya would be amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Did you see The Greatest Showman?
Yeah.
It's so, I liked it. Did you not like it? You said it like you don't like it. I was about to be like, I loved it.
You know what? I
didn't even finish it, by the way. I never finished the end of it.
I did walk out.
Okay. Well, so we got to the same point.
You know what? Yeah, I think it's weak, but like, I just love the audacity of some of the moments, like just telling me that like Michelle Williams is the same age as Hugh Jackman, like the audacity that you have, the audacity that like that you're saying P.T. Barnum was like a good person. It's going to be one of those great cultural Rocky Horror Picture Show where like you can watch it with a group of gays and we
with
can just,
a nudge and a wink.
Exactly. Yeah. We can just like shout at the screen for 2 hours. Like,
I mean, there was a lot of ridiculous stuff about it. And I, again, did not finish it. I got to like, I think it was the Zac Efron and Zendaya song, and I like loved it, and then it was bedtime or something for me. You know, it was 10:05, and so I watched to then, and I loved that scene, and then I was like, I don't think I want to finish it, because I had such a great feeling about it.
Yeah, I mean, I love all the performances of all the songs, like anytime and on like The Voice or American Idol, when they sing any of the songs, I'm just like, brilliant. Thank you. Yes, you've changed the world. I love that.
It's interesting because we talked about the Cinderella remake that was just a few years ago, and I feel like that's already forgotten.
Yeah.
And of course, maybe time will tell and 10 years we'll be talking about it. I doubt that.
No.
I don't, right? Yeah. We're not going to be talking about it. I don't think we'll be talking about Beauty and the Beast in 3 years.
No. I think those are cash grabs.
Yeah.
I mean, Beauty and the Beast was like the highest grossing PG movie of all time. There was some,
the numbers are insane.
Yeah, the numbers were crazy.
And they sort of trick you, and I think you leave those movies being like, oh, I loved it, but they're so forgettable.
Yes.
Or I think maybe you leave the theater and feel like you love it because it reminded you of the cartoon.
Exactly.
Right?
That's what it is. It's 100% that.
Yeah. Because it's weird. The Cinderella, I'm like, I saw that in the theater and I can't remember one thing. I can't even tell you The girl, I think the girl was Mia.
I don't know who anybody was.
No, I can't remember the prince.
Cate Blanchett.
I only remember Emma Watson from Beauty and the Beast because of her horrendous singing.
Yeah. Like huffing and puffing up that hill, just like auto-tuning up to the
note. Oh my God, like, that was like painful when she was doing that song. What's that first song she has?
Yeah.
I'm like, girl. Dub her or something. Yeah, I don't get that.
Let her sing.
How did that get passed?
I don't know.
How did that get passed?
It stressed me out.
They should have dubbed Brandy's voice, and Brandy sounded lovely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we remember this movie from 1997, a TV movie. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all still talking about it. And if you look up online, there's tons of articles. Last year was the 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. That's why we referenced some stuff that we read about it. It really made an impact on a lot of people, not just people of color and people like me and everyone, I think, who saw it. It really made an impact. And so I wish studios would take more chances with projects like this because you will get a lasting impression. Mm-hmm. What do you think is similar to The Wonderful World of Disney now? Like, is there something in the television landscape that families can all sit and watch together and all enjoy? You know, I had that Rosie O'Donnell episode where I talked about her show where it was like, I could watch it with my grandmother or anyone and we would all enjoy it or get something out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a lot of that. I think Pixar, those movies are something everyone can watch together and they're doing well and everyone wants to see Finding Dory or whatever it is.
Right.
Do you think there's anything else?
There's something like that accessible and that.
Because this Cinderella and Wonderful World of Disney, I felt like every age, genre, sex, whatever, could watch it, enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of content that's needed right now. We need content that like brings people together because the world's kind of tough right now.
Right, so, I know, it's tough. We need this sort of easy, not easy, but nice.
Yeah, telling us like how great the world can be, you know, if we just love each other. And it's kind of like stressing me out that I can't think of something.
I feel like we're lacking because before you came over, I was trying to think of something and I couldn't think of anything other than Pixar. And Pixar was one movie a year.
Yeah.
And the movie theaters are so filled with these superhero movies, which a lot of them are family friendly, but I don't know that there is, I don't know. There needs to be some sort of balance, I think, right? Like superhero movies may be for everyone, but I think we also need some romances. We need some other levels instead of just going to the theater as a family to watch some evil villain try to take over the earth.
Right. Gosh, what is that? That's gonna bother me. I mean, like, you know what I think it is? I think that like Lin-Manuel Miranda, hopefully within the next like 5-10 years, like lead that charge of creating this content that connects everyone on some level. In the Heights, now that they finally have the rights back and it's back at another studio, they're going to be going into pre-production. I think that's going to be something that's going to feel timeless and it's going to harken back to kind of like West Side Story meets this kind of 90s hip hop, meets this kind of contemporary feeling of today, meets this kind of simple love story, but also universal feelings of how do you do your best in a world that kind of tells you can't be something. So I feel like In the Heights, if they were to do, you know, like I would love if they did like a Spring Awakening, a movie of that. I think there is something magical about all these musicals. They're timeless for a reason, you know? And I think that if we were to kind of mind those things, that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know, like bring it back.
This movie in particular, I mean, I could talk about it forever. I love the story. It was a Whitney Houston production as well. I don't think we mentioned that, but it says Wonderful World of Disney presents and Whitney Houston present, right? Like it's both of them, which is amazing. Yeah. Like Disney doesn't just allow that for anyone.
Never.
And it is really a part of Whitney's legacy. I mean, I know Whitney has The Bodyguard and this great music, but I think there is a generation of people that think of her as the fairy godmother.
Yeah. And she said in that article, that Shondaland article, she said that Cinderella was her favorite project that she ever did. You know, I think because she was on all sides of it, you know, she was in it, she was producing it, she did the music and the acting, and she also like helped shepherd this work through. And I think it's a legacy piece.
And the article we keep referencing is from Shondaland, Shonda Rhimes, her company. They did a 20-year retrospective last year. So everyone go look that up. It's like an oral history of the movie. And it's so interesting. There are so many different little tidbits that we didn't really get to.
Icons. If you're anything like me, you love to spend TV commercial breaks browsing real estate listings. Now, I love watching my favorite shows and also looking up homes, especially the ones that I know that I can't afford. And my favorite app to use is Redfin. When Matt and I were looking for a home, we used the Redfin app to search for homes in the area and within our budget. The Redfin app made it super easy. Now, Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations. So finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. Plus, if you see something you like, you can book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So Redfin made it so easy to filter out the homes that didn't meet or have the necessities I wanted. I still use it to search for homes close by and in the cities my favorite reality TV stars live. Download the Redfin app to get started. Ever since I saw Clueless, I wanted to have the most amazing wardrobe, and that includes all of the clothes inside the wardrobe closet, and that's why I'm excited to talk to you about Quince. Now, Quince has you covered with truly timeless pieces that never go out of style. You'll have them in your closet forever. Quince has all sorts of must-haves. I'm talking Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50. I have a blue cashmere crew neck sweater I got from them that I get so many compliments on all the time. I love it. Plus, iconic 100% leather jackets and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes us savings all over to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Love that. Makes you feel good about shopping with Quince. Again, I've gotten a lot of stuff there. Just good quality pieces and a lot of different options if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe. So indulge in the affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/iconic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/iconic to get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/iconic.
It's just a great, happy movie. And I crave more content like that. Just happy. You know, I know Disney, aside from Pixar, does some great movies like Moana, and, you know, some of their non-Pixar products are great. But I just want more of it. You know,
who would you want to be the Disney princess of today if they were to do another Cinderella? They were to do
Who would
it's
I want?
Been 20 years.
I mean, I would love to see Beyonce play the fairy godmother to, I mean, any of these young girls. I mean, they can even go older too, because I mean, Whitney was young. She was in her 30s at the time. I feel like they can go much older, like a Viola Davis or I mean, so many different women that. Aaliyah Salonga. Right. Did I say her name right?
Yeah.
I just was in a wormhole of hers the other day. Could you imagine if they rebooted and Brandy was the fairy godmother? Oh my God, I'd
die. That would be amazing.
You know, it's interesting to me, Brandy's career, where it is now, because she really was this young pop princess and she was poised for that Whitney Houston kind of stardom, because she not only had this project, but she had tons of films she did. I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. Do you remember she did that other made for TV movie with Diana Ross, Double Platinum?
Yes.
Right? You remember that? I remember that. That was good.
Double
but
platinum.
She was doing a lot of acting, and I felt like she should be that huge star, and I'm not exactly sure why.
We moved into this era of youth obsession that, like, once she got past like the certain age, it was like someone decided, like, okay, like once they get to a certain age, like, we no longer need them. Like, we don't have these like legacy artists anymore. It's so hard because it's, you know, like Cher spans 5 decades, you know, like Whitney Houston spanned 4 decades, you know, Mariah Carey too. It's just like now we're like this obsession of, okay, now that we have Charlie XCX and BB Rexha, all these like new, we're constantly trying to die out.
I was just reading this article. It was about how it's easier for these record companies to get a hit with someone people don't know. And so they are putting all their power and the writing and all the professionals behind new people. So they get one big hit and then move on. We grew up with these icons of who've been around forever. And it's tough. And then a lot of these, the good singers don't always write their own music. Yeah. So they need the people behind them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Whitney never wrote her own music, yeah. but she always had the best people. She had David Foster exactly. and like some of the Diane Warrens and mm-hmm. some of the best people behind her
yeah.
and the money behind her, Clive Davis, yeah. would just, it's sad mm-hmm. that it's not.
Yeah.
It's sad. I wonder if any of these girls, do you think any of the current pop girls will be lasting? Like, do you think Ariana and Grande will be remembered?
I think out of all of them, yeah, like Ariana Grande is trajectory wise and also where she kind of fell. Like, she fell right before this push of these mm-hmm. all these mm-hmm. new girls, and then she really kind of, with her first album, really kind of respected and paid homage to a lot of the people mm-hmm. before her. And I think because she's so respectful of those people, I mean, and she also started on Broadway, not to say these new girls aren't, but I think
but they're trash.
Yeah. yeah. But I think that she, because she did that Whitney Houston tribute yeah. On that Greatest Hits ABC show, and it was stunning.
Yeah, like, she's got a great voice.
Yeah. So I think out of any of these new pop girls, like, I'm rooting for Ariana, and I'm also, yeah. and we'll see.
Do you think that Meghan Trainor's the next Celine Dion? I'm just kidding. She's not.
I'm gonna kill you.
Okay, yeah. So as a music fan, what's your favorite Disney song? Do you have an all-time favorite Disney song?
Hands down, Reflection. I would lip sync that song in the mirror. In seventh grade, we had to do.
I'm doing it now. I still do it. Now.
Yeah, I still do it. In seventh grade, I had a teacher, Mr. Jaworski, who was actually Mr. Leather Daddy Cleveland, 1999.
No.
And he was this like super gay leather daddy teacher, and I was just like, he was like,
did he wear leather to class?
I mean, he like just had the handlebar mustache, sure. the perfect hair, oiled up at school.
My
just
God.
Like wearing that, this, like the tightest polos, the tightest pants. And I was just like, this, you're going to kill me. You're going to kill me dead in seventh grade. He made us lip sync for our lives in seventh grade.
Who is this hero?
Not all heroes wear capes. Some wear leather. Yeah. And
some are in Ohio teaching classes in leather.
And so this one girl did Reflection, and he was so gagged that he made her do it three more times. What's his name? Mr. Jaworski. So shout out to Jaworski. Mr. Jaworski.
He's a star. Yeah. I hope he's listening.
Yeah. I went back to Cleveland one year, and I was at cocktails downtown Cleveland, yeah. and or not downtown, it was like in Ohio City. And I walk in, and he's there with his new boy. And so we sang "Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me" because it was karaoke night.
Oh my God, Nathan, this story is a dream.
Yeah. It was. Yeah,
I'm going to go with you next time over Christmas or something. Do you go back for the holidays?
Well, my parents live in D.C. now, but I still try and
God
go back.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Your hot dad's in D.C. I got to go visit there and Cleveland. Oh, I want to meet this teacher.
It's too much.
Do you remember in the Christina Aguilera Behind the Music when you're so impressed that she was able to do that? What was it? The high?
Yes.
The high C mm-hmm. above E? Or am I making that up?
High E above C.
High E above C. Like, mm-hmm. how do I even remember that from Behind the Music?
Yeah.
The song required a high E over middle C. That note is a difficult note to sing. There's no two ways around it.
I called Christina and I asked her, can you hit the high E an octave above middle C in full voice? And she said, Mom, can I hit the high E an octave above middle C?
She had to find a song that actually contained that high note. And she ended up choosing I Wanna Run to You by Whitney Houston.
Christina had an old tape recorder. And she went into the bathroom and belted that note out.
Yeah, it was like Christina Aguilera could do it.
Yeah. She like went, she's like, I love when she just like, yeah, so I went into the closet and I just like heard the note and I did it.
I just did it. I wish I could say that one day. Yeah, I heard the note and I just did it.
Yeah.
Impossible.
And there was something interesting about on set. Because it was like the first time a lot of people have had these hugely multicultural cast on set where didn't hire enough people to do like black women's hair. And
right.
Yeah. And so like it was, and I actually had the same situation. I was doing this show with all Asians, and Asian hair is just much different than, you know, a lot of white people's hair, and all of our hairstyles were like falling out because it was just like,
they had white hairdressers.
Yeah. Because we had only. And so
in the article you're referring to, they mentioned that they didn't hire enough African-American hairdressers.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know, this was Victor Garber's like first big on-screen role. Yeah. He had done a lot of stage stuff.
All your mother and I want is for you to be happy.
Happiness has nothing to do with it. I mean, of course we want you to be happy, but you do have certain obligations.
What your mother's trying to say is, we think it's time you chose a bride and produced an heir.
Someday soon, this entire kingdom will be yours.
Not that soon.
And he's a cute, openly gay man now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you attracted to Victor Garber? I was trying to figure that out as I rewatched.
I feel like if they have a pulse, I'm attracted. You know?
Good answer.
You alive? Yeah. I'm attracted. You dead? Still attracted. You know, still here for it.
Yeah. Oh my God, Nathan, yeah. On that note. This was so fun. I love you so much for doing this. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Where can people find you on social media?
You can follow me at Instagram at Nay3Ray, N-A-Y 3, the number 3, R-A-Y.
And what about the show? Where can people find?
So the Back to School special should be dropping sometime in August, but you can see all of us at facebook.com/Club Mickey Mouse. So we opened the ABC Christmas Day Parade. It was choreographed by Mandy Moore from So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars. Not that Mandy Moore.
No, we love them both.
Yeah, we love them both.
I got to do a Mandy Moore pop dive because I'm obsessed with her too, but... For another time.
Yes, for another time. Yeah.
While you're over at Facebook, please find me over there. I'm Pellegrino Danny on Facebook. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Danny Pellegrino. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes if you like it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to Samsung Technologies for sponsoring the show. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/everythingiconic and pledge $4 or more per month to get access to all the bonus episodes and help support the show. So thank you guys so much for listening. I love you all so much.